Are back pain, sciatica, or nerve symptoms affecting your quality of life? Endoscopic spine surgery may be an option for you. We're here to explain who may benefit, how it works, and what recovery can look like. Welcome to the Live Greater podcast series, Information for a Healthier You from the University of Maryland Medical System. I'm Melanie Cole, and today we're highlighting endoscopic spine surgery for back pain. Joining me, we have a panel today with Dr. Steven Silverian. He's a spine surgeon at the Spine Institute at UM St. Joseph Medical Center. And Dr. Justin Tortolani, he's a spine surgeon and director of the Spine Institute at University of Maryland St. Joseph Medical Center and a member of the UM Spine Network. Doctors, welcome. Thank you so much for being with us today. And Dr. Silverian, I'd like to start with you. Give us a little table setting here about back pain. We hear about it. We all know somebody. If you're of a certain age or you're in certain fields, you know about back pain. Tell us a little bit about how common it is and how it affects the quality of life of people that suffer from back pain.
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly one of the most common reasons that people present, you know, our clinics for evaluation. I think the numbers suggest that upwards of 80% of people will have at least one episode of acute back pain at some point in their life. There's a multitude of things that can cause this. Oftentimes, it's muscular pain, myofascial pain that leads to isolated pain in the lower back, but there's a number of degenerative changes, degenerative disc disease, facet arthropathy, spondylolisthesis, and otherwise that can cause pain. You can also get pain referred from the nerves in the spine themselves related to stenosis. And then obviously you can have injuries, fractures, facet dislocations, and things like that. So there's a whole multitude of reasons why you may be experiencing back pain, but in all likelihood, most everyone will have at least one episode at some point in their life.
Yeah, you know, as someone who's been in this field for so long as I have, and I've seen so many people with back problems, I've always maintained that until you've really experienced it, you do not know how painful a bad back can be, whether it's lower spine or middle. You know, I mean, it is absolutely debilitating. And so we know, and we're going to talk about endoscopic spine surgery, but Dr. Tortolani, before we get into that, when we think of those conservative measures that we might try before we get into a discussion of surgery, tell us about some of those. When someone comes to you, and because back pain can be, pain in general, can be somewhat subjective, how do we measure it? And what are some of the things that you might do with someone before you're going to start the discussion of surgery?
Thanks for the question, Melanie. So first of all, we measure it usually by asking patients on a scale 0 to 10, how bad is their pain? And you're absolutely right. When it comes to back pain, and especially when it comes to nerve pain, for many patients, it's the worst pain they've ever felt in their life. It's right up there with childbearing or a kidney stone, which are generally the two worst pains that people will feel in their life. But when you ask women who've given birth to compare that pain to pain, for example, from a disc herniation, they take the childbirth any day. And part of that's because you get this wonderful prize at the end of it. The other part is that you know it's going to be of limited duration. But with back pain, there's an inescapability part of it. So patients don't know how or when they're going to get out of the pain, so it can cause tremendous anxiety. So that's another piece of it as far as how we evaluate the patients. But in terms of the second part to your question, which is, what are some of the early steps? How do you get out of the pain? Physical therapy is a huge piece for us, and we partner with some fantastic physical therapists in our area. Sometimes we'll offer spinal injections in appropriately selected patients, and these can be steroid injections, or there's other sorts of nerve blocks can be done. And then there's other types of treatments, chiropractic treatments, acupuncture, which tend to round out the non-operative course for patients.
It's true. And as someone who has given birth and had the worst sciatic pain I've ever had in my life, I can agree with you, doctor. I mean, it was really, I have never experienced anything like that. So this is a great conversation we're having today, because that kind of pain is, you don't see the end of the tunnel. So let's talk about this. Now, Dr. Silverian, when we hear this term, endoscopic spine surgery, what does that even mean? Because we've heard minimally invasive, we hear all these different terms bandied about. What does that mean?
Yeah, so I think endoscopic spine surgery probably falls into the category of minimally invasive surgery, and it is certainly the smallest sort of incisional and soft tissue footprint of surgeries that we offer as spine surgeons. It's done through a sub-centimeter incision, so about 7 millimeters total in the length of the incision. And then you insert a cannula into the incision and down to the area, you know, that you're going to be working on within the spine. And then there's different techniques, whether you're doing a uniportal technique or a biportal technique, where you may make a second small incision or do everything through the one single incision, and the instrumentation goes directly through the camera. And then you can accomplish your goal, depending on what the indication for the surgery is, operating through an incredibly small footprint that has the advantage of very little soft tissue disruption and tends to be tolerated quite well from a surgical pain standpoint as compared to larger, more open techniques.
Isn't that amazing? What an exciting time in both of your fields. So Dr. Tortolani, what are the benefits? Now, Dr. Silverian just described a little bit about the procedure and what's involved. What are the benefits, but not only to the patient in terms of pain management and recovery, but also to the surgeon? As we used to do everything open, everything was open. Now this is more minimally invasive. Tell us a little bit about the benefits and the advantages of endoscopic spine surgery.
Thank you for bringing that up. Most of the time, we don't get questions about the benefits to the surgeon, but there are tremendous benefits. The first of which is visibility and light. So these scopes and the optics, the scope is basically a camera that's 2 millimeters in diameter. So it's incredibly small, but it allows us, because we're at the level of the tissue, to be seeing the tissue 20 to 30 times normal visibility when you're looking at it with the naked eye. So the magnification is incredible. The other thing is that you're infiltrating saline or water. So you're in an aqueous, you're underwater essentially when you're looking at the tissues. And the water does a nice job of dissecting for you. So it creates visual planes that you wouldn't ordinarily be able to see. And since we're working around the nerves, we call it hydrodissection. The water actually, or the saline, dissects the tissue for us and pushes the nerves out of the way so we can operate in a safer environment. So the visibility, the lighting, the fact that you're underwater, and the fact that the water can actually do the dissection for you helps in terms of patient safety.
I think to add to that too, in terms of surgical or surgeon benefit, would be your changing the ergonomics of the case in a lot of ways as well. Instead of being kind of hunched over, looking down, flexing at the neck for hours at a time, you're staring at a screen ahead of you, which tends to put less stress and strain through the necks and backs of the surgeons performing the case.
I'm glad you brought up ergonomics, because I was going to ask about that, because it really must be more comfortable for you surgeons so that you're able to really focus more on the area. And so that's really a cool aspect as well. Now, Dr. Silverian, when we think of patient selection, is endoscopic spine surgery kind of available broadly for everyone? Or are there certain contraindications when we think of maybe obesity, extra adipose tissue around the back? Are there things that make it a little bit more difficult to navigate?
Yeah, for sure. I think in terms of the adipose tissue and obesity, that certainly makes the case, can make the case challenging. The cannulas and cameras and scopes that we have are only of a certain length. They do accommodate quite a variety of patient sizes, but if it's the camera's not long enough to reach the area of interest, that would obviously not be an option for that person. But at the same time, in some ways, it makes some of those cases easier if it is an option, because you don't have to dissect manually through an open incision through a lot of that tissue. But then in terms of the indications for the surgery, that really, I think, is surgeon dependent as well as experience dependent with the endoscope. It's a fairly new technology. It's a fairly new technique that we are quickly adopting here and also around the country. But the indications really depend on the comfort level of the surgeon. You can do anything from discectomies, intralamellar discectomies, foraminal discectomies. And there are people using endoscopic burrs and doing full decompressions through the endoscope. And then there are even people, I'm not one of them yet, but there are people doing instrumentation and infusion through the endoscope as well. So the indications continue to expand. Certainly there are, it's not for everyone. If you have significant multi-level stenosis requiring a long segment decompression infusion, probably not your best option. You're still going to be doing that in the traditional open sense for the most part. But single level disease, disc herniations, these indications are ever expanding here.
Yeah. So Dr. Tortolani, when you're talking to your patients and we think of shared decision making, what do you tell them about the procedure itself? Let's talk a little bit about the day of the procedure. Is this outpatient? Do they spend a night? Can they go home that same day? What is it like for the patient on the day? We'll get into recovery and things that they can do afterwards, but the day of, what does that look like for the patient?
I would say that's the biggest change that we've seen, or the biggest influence that endoscopy has offered for patients, is that they all go home the same day. And whereas even on outpatient surgeries where we've done it classically with an open technique, it'll take a couple weeks for patients to recover from their surgical pain. Whereas with endoscopic techniques, and it was a real eye-opening experience for all of us as we started this, is you see the patient in the recovery room and you'll say, well, how's your pain? And often patients would say, oh, well, the pain that I had before surgery is gone. But we'll say, how's your surgical pain? And they'll say, well, that's still pretty bad. Now, they don't have any pain. They don't have surgical pain. They don't have leg pain. They don't have the back pain that they came in with. And that's kind of the jaw-dropping change that we've seen with endoscopic spine care. I'll never forget my first patient. I called the night of, and he said he had just got back from a 4-mile walk with his dog. And it kind of blew me away. That would never happen previously, because the surgical pain limits patients from that kind of movement early on.
Along those lines, Dr. Tortolani, expand a little bit after the procedure. Is there then a multimodal pain management approach that you use for post-surgical pain we're talking about? Maybe not the back pain, but what do you tell patients? Do they all ask you for pain medication to go home with? I know we're really doing the stewardship, opioids, trying to back off of that a little bit. So what do you tell patients about right after surgery?
So everybody gets stronger pain relievers like opioids to go home with, but most of the patients so far, I would say 80% of the patients don't require any opioids. They'll use ice, Tylenol, or Advil, an anti-inflammatory, to deal with whatever surgical discomfort they have. We do get them going with physical therapy pretty quickly after surgery, so 2 to 3 weeks following the procedures, they'll be able to enroll in physical therapy and do some light exercise again within 2 to 3 weeks of the procedure. So the recovery is rapid. We are also still evolving and learning. So in terms of protocols, as we get into more complex endoscopic procedures, we'll have to develop more specific protocols for recovery. But thus far, we've been encouraged by the minimal use of opiates and their really rapid return to normal daily function.
Yeah, I think that's what's so exciting about this type of procedure as we see all of these advances. And Dr. Silverian, how have been the outcomes? What have you seen? What have patients been saying to you about this, like 4-6 weeks down the line, when they've been suffering with back pain for who knows how many years, whether it was acute or chronic, whatever? What are they saying to you?
Yeah, I think so far the outcomes for the most part have been great in the appropriate selected patients that get surgery for the right reason. And it doesn't typically take till that 4 or 6 week mark. You see sort of significant improvement, like Dr. Tortolani was saying, fairly quickly. I had, for example, a young guy, a college football player who had a foraminal disc herniation and could barely walk secondary to the pain. It was in severe, kind of radicular pain radiating down his leg. So we did a transforaminal endoscopic discectomy on him and removed the disc, and he went to the recovery room, and I had another case immediately afterwards, which took about an hour. And by the time I got out of that next case, he had already left the hospital. So I never had a chance to see him after surgery. So I gave him a call that afternoon and basically said, I have zero pain whatsoever. My leg feels great. Thanks so much. And I've seen him once or twice since then, and he has had no recurrence of the symptoms. I don't want to paint this as a total flowery, rosy situation that would work great for everyone. But I think in appropriate selected patients, the outcomes have been pretty fantastic and they recover very quickly. They're like Dr. Tortolani was saying, that the post-surgical pain that we typically see with open cases really has not been an issue. And the nerve pain tends to get better fairly quickly in the majority of patients.
Yeah, I was just going to piggyback really quick onto what Steve said about the appropriately selected patients. Obviously, these techniques are not for everybody. And part of our counseling patients before surgery is just discussion with them. What are the positives and negatives of this technique compared to our traditional methods, and coming to a shared decision on what makes the most sense for them? So thanks for highlighting that, Steve.
Yeah, I think that's an important aspect when you're working with the patients directly so that they understand what they can expect. I think that's so important when we don't know. That's the fear is of the unknown. So that's what we're doing here today. And I'd love to give you each a chance for a final thought. And Dr. Silverian, when someone is suffering from back pain or leg pain, that's the worst, what would you like them to know about not putting off care, about asking the right questions, really working with their physician to find out the best treatment modalities for them?
Yeah, absolutely. We obviously don't want to see anybody suffering. So if you're having pain in your back, pain in your leg, by all means, happy to see anyone at any time. The reality is the vast majority of back and lower extremity symptoms can resolve with conservative modalities, those being the things we mentioned earlier in terms of physical therapy, injections, activity modifications, pain medications, and so on. And, you know, at least at our institution here, we're not pushing surgery on anybody who we don't think that we can truly help. And we're going to try everything we can to treat you with those conservative modalities first and get you better without putting you under the knife. But in those selected patients that surgery does benefit them and we think that we can make them better after they've exhausted sort of conservative care, fortunately, these options seem to be getting better and better in some cases with this endoscopic stuff and other techniques. So I think it's the future is getting brighter and brighter for patients and surgeons alike.
Dr. Tortolani, last word to you. What takeaways would you like to give the listeners about all the exciting work that you're doing at the University of Maryland Medical System?
Well, I would say that innovation is really at the center of everything that we do, and endoscopic spine surgery is just the most recent iteration of that. I think it's also important for those listening to know that we're embarking on this programmatically so that all of the surgeons here doing spine surgery are engaged with the endoscopic spine program. I think it's important for all of us to learn from each other and to therefore offer the best possible solutions for our patients.
Beautifully said. Thank you both so much for joining us today and sharing your incredible expertise for patients that are suffering from back pain. You've given us a lot to think about and a lot of great information. Thank you again for joining us. And to listen to more podcasts, please visit us at umms.org/podcast. You can also visit us on YouTube or your favorite podcast platform. Thank you so much for listening to Live Greater, a health and wellness podcast brought to you by the University of Maryland Medical System. We look forward to joining us again, and please share on your social media. I'm Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for being with us.